Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is a special edition of Franchise Today. My guest again today for part two in this series is best-selling author of Profitable Partnerships, Greg Nathan. Working with hundreds of franchise systems around the world, Greg and his team of psychologists and the Franchise Relation Institute have developed some remarkable tools and models to help franchisors create profitable partnerships. In fact, Greg and his team have spent the past 20 years researching the science of successful franchise relationships. Greg is live with me again today from Australia to talk about his upcoming event, Profitable Partnerships Franchise Relations Bootcamps. And he'll also provide us his insight and thoughts about what effective franchisee training and support looks like today. Greg, welcome back to Franchise Today.
Hi, Paul. Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. You know, in our last segment of this special edition of Franchise Today, besides, of course, stating my name incorrectly, you and I getting franchisee buy-in to new initiatives and programs, and I specifically recall five key words: leadership, communications, listening, transparency, and trust. So before we move on to today's discussion, would you care to add any additional points to yesterday's discussion?
Yes, there's one more I'd throw in there, Paul. There was a song written by Aretha Franklin in the 60s, or sung by Aretha Franklin. You remember that song?
R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
Tell me what it means to me. That's right. You go to the top of the class. So respect is the underlying kind of principle behind everything. And we all want it. We all crave it. We all need it. And I think I would put that into your bag of words there, Paul. But that was a great list of words you summarized yesterday beautifully.
Well, I'd like to add something, as you said. We all need the respect. We should all get the respect. And I think we all deserve the respect. And I think that respect is mutual respect. So, yes, absolutely. I definitely will add that to the word list.
Good. And, Paul, I'd like to just add also today we're going to talk about franchisee training and support, but I'd like to extend it, if that's okay with you, to franchisor training and support as well. It's just as important. And we could sort of bundle that all up and we could talk about franchise learning. So I'd like to extend our discussion today into the whole sphere of the people involved.
Absolutely, and being we use the word mutual here, I agree, franchisee and franchisor training and support, it will be. And I guess the, you know, as I was looking over the topic that we've communicated back and forth on, you know, effective franchisee and franchisor training and support, I guess the key word there is effective.
Yes.
What makes it effective?
Oh, I love that question. I think effectiveness, we've got two elements here, Paul. The first one, that it needs to be relevant to the needs of the learner, the franchisee or the franchisor. A lot of training and learning is driven by the desires and the idiosyncrasies of the trainer rather than the learner. So the first point, we need to be learner-focused. And find out what do people want to learn about and what's of interest to them. And the second point would be practical. There's probably too much theory that occurs in the learning and training that goes on around universities and the courses and so on. So I think it's got to be able to be translated immediately into practice. And, you know, I like to use a model of learning called action learning. And action learning is based on how humans learn throughout their life. And that is that we experience things, we think about what happened to us, and then we come up with a theory in our mind about why did that happen? You know, like I said something and the other person got offended. Why did that happen? And then you might come to a realization, maybe it was my tone of voice that offended them. So then you come up with a little plan to say, well, next time I talk to that person, I'm going to try and have a more respectful tone of voice rather than a patronizing tone of voice. And then we go back to trying it again. And maybe next time we get it right and they don't get offended. That's how learning occurs in reality. So there's four stages of the action learning cycle. There's we experience something, we think about what happened, we come up with a theory about what happened, and then we try something new, and then we're back to experience again. And that's how we base our training programs. The Profitable Partnerships Bootcamp, Paul, will be using a lot of action learning, and I'll be getting people to think about real-life experiences that they've had that have been challenging or successful, and why was that experience, why did it work? What was the secret levers or, you know, success points in that experience that made it work or fail, and then how could you do it differently or build on your successes? And as people reflect and talk about their real life experiences, not only does the lights go on for them, but it can really help the other people in the groups as well, because we all learn from each other's experience. So that's a long way, Paul, of answering your question, but needs to be relevant and needs to be practical.
Absolutely. You know, it seems to follow the action way of learning. Seems to follow what I preach a lot in sales training, which is tell them what you're going to do it, and then tell them what you've done.
Yes, exactly. People like to know, where are you going with this? You know, where are you taking me? So spot on.
Right. Absolutely. Well, you know, when we talk about, you know, learning, we talk about teaching, we talk about the whole educational process. I like the word you used, relevance, and I agree. And also, what they're interested in learning. You know, with that in mind, what type of content should be covered in franchisee training and also franchisor training?
Sure. Okay. Let's tackle the franchisee one first. And you know, this is this question of it comes back to relevance. I'd like to start in what's a franchisee's job? Like if we were to map out a job description and say, Mr. or Mrs. Franchisee, you have to focus on achieving these things. I would come up with three elements to that. And the first one is you need to focus on maximizing your profit. So that's the first thing. And there's only two ways to do that. They've got to build their sales and they've got to control their costs. So any training or learning that you're doing with franchisees should be focusing on the elements of driving profitability, and there's many of them. So that would be the first one. And if you were to run a training course for franchisees, we could talk about this a little further down, Paul, around how to drive greater profitability, they will be very excited about that because it's extremely relevant to them. The second
Sure.
aspect of the franchisee's job is to create customer loyalty, or we often use the word advocates. You know, an advocate is someone who goes out of their way to tell other people how great you are. So
mm-hmm.
We want to build advocates for their business, but also for the brand. And so we could talk about all sorts of things and do training about what converts a customer from, you know, just having an experience, a transactional experience where they gave you some money and they got what they expected and went away, as opposed to what transforms a customer into an advocate where they go, wow, that was amazing, thank you so much. I feel fantastic for having dealt with you and I'm going to tell all my friends and family about you guys. So building advocacy is the secret to building a successful business and a successful brand. So I would have lots of training sessions and learning around that. And the third element was the topic of our discussion yesterday, Paul, and that is the third element of the franchisee's job is to participate constructively in the franchise network. So it's all about building a profitable partnership. And I would have sessions specifically on showing franchisees how to complain effectively if they have a problem, how to raise it with their franchisor so the franchisor listens and takes it on board, you know, the importance of attending meetings, of getting involved, of sharing your knowledge and experience with your fellow franchisees and so on. So another word we use for this is franchisee citizenship. So they're the three elements of a good training program for franchisees. And of course, within that, you would have all the technical training that's relevant to your particular industry. And that should be ongoing as well. So, Paul, those three things would be the foundations of any franchisee training programs. And in the work that my team does, we spend most of our time, you know, teaching franchisees how to be good franchise citizens. Not enough discussion goes on about that. And if we were to spend more time on that, I think we'd have a lot less problems in the franchising industry and a lot more money would be spent on marketing and training rather than on attorneys. So I don't know if you want to make any comments on that, Paul, before we move on to the franchisor training side.
No, I mean, I think those are, you know, like any little stool or any little table that sets up on three legs. I'm thinking if one of those legs is knocked out, the table's going to fall over. And yes. I think the same what you're talking about these three key components, these three legs to the stool, if you would. I think they're all dependent upon each other.
They do, and I think franchisors are guilty sometimes of missing the point in terms of what they should be rewarding and reinforcing in terms of franchisee learning. I'll give you an example. Many years ago, I was at a franchise conference, and they were having their awards evening. You know, we call it the Gala Awards. I think, what do you call those awards? The Galar Awards or something. Do you? You pronounce it differently.
Yeah, some pronounce it Gala, some pronounce it Gala.
Gala, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Right.
And in Australia, a Galar is a bird, a really stupid bird that often gets run over. So we sometimes have a bit of a joke about that. But at these Gala Awards, this franchisee was awarded the best franchisee of the year. And I turned to the one of the executives I was sitting next to, and it was a black tie dinner. I said, oh, that's interesting. Why did he win that award? And this executive said very excitedly, oh, he's amazing. He turns over $15 million a year in his store, and our average sales are $1 million a year. So the inference is he's 15 times better than all the other franchisees. Now, I sort of held judgment because my experience is just having high sales does not necessarily mean a successful business. And as it turned out, in ensuing months, this guy was the franchisee from hell. His sales were driven by wholesaling rather than retailing. So he was going out, instead of selling through his shop, he was going out delivering products and services to the wholesale market. And as we all know about wholesaling, you have to discount deeply to get wholesale business. So he's paying his 6.5% royalty on his wholesale sales, not his retail sales. And that 6.5% plus his advertising levy meant that he was probably not making money on those sales. The franchisor, of course, was delighted because they're getting their royalties on these $15 million, but extremely short-sighted. Because because this guy's out delivering, you know, he's travelling overseas to China and he's importing products and he's not in his shop, so the staff are not being mentored and looked after, so the staff are not delivering good service to the customers in the store, and so they're not building advocates. So we're getting very mediocre customer service in his business. And finally, he was extremely angry and frustrated because he was losing money, and he wanted to negotiate the royalties with the franchisor. So they were always fighting, and he was always complaining. So he fails the third piece as well about participating constructively in the franchise system. And not surprisingly, within 12 months, he was bankrupt. Now, that's, you know, the sort of lunacy of not looking at success in a holistic way when we talk about franchisee success and what franchisees need to be good at. Let's talk about the franchisor side of it then. What should we be training franchisors to be good at? Three things, again, I would say. The first one would be to be good leaders, probably the most important. And a good leader does, in franchising, does three things. I call them the three C's of good franchise leadership. First one is they're caring in their approach. They care about their franchisee's success, and they talk about it and they demonstrate it. Second one would be they're competent to run the business. They're upgrading their management skills, their strategic thinking skills, and they really understand the industry that they're working in. And the third one would be they are consistent in their dealings with their franchisees. So they don't have favourites. Everybody gets the same deal. They may alter the nature of the support to different franchisees because of the needs of the different franchisees. But the basic deal in terms of what people are paying and the value people are getting from the franchise is consistent. So that would be the first one, Paul, good leadership. And as you know, you don't arrive, you know, at being a great leader. It's a journey, and there's always more that we can learn about that. So franchisor learning should be largely about what does a good leader do. The second one would be about how do you support franchisees with relevant services. So we would talk about, you know, they should be trained in coaching skills, field support programs, how to conduct training programs themselves for their franchisees. You know, there's a whole science of adult learning. They should be informed about that. They should be they should know how to run great conferences and great regional meetings with their franchisees. And again, there are techniques and skills. We'll be covering all these at the boot camp on how to run great meetings. So that's the second piece of what good franchisors should be good at. And the third one, Paul, is they need to protect the brand and create a healthy franchising culture. And there's a whole lot of stuff we'll cover at the boot camp as well about what does a healthy culture look like, what are the behaviours that drive a healthy franchising culture, why is it important, and also how do you educate people around your brand. Because the brand and the culture are two sides of the same coin, and they need to be consistent. The brand... You know, I think there's a mistake often, Paul. People think the brand is the logo, and it's not, obviously. The logo is a symbol of your brand, but your brand is your reputation. And it's what, you know, you're projecting out there to the market, to your customers. The culture is who you really are, and the experience the customers actually have when they deal with you. So if you're telling the customers we're the friendliest business in town, but your culture is to be terse and rude, we've obviously got a disconnect. And so good franchisor training would be training the franchisors about how do we teach franchisees about the importance of these things and how do we practice them ourselves.
You brought up two key words, and I'd like you to explain the difference between them, because some people out there in business and some very experienced people in business interchange them together, and I know they're not the same, and that's training and coaching. What's the distinct mm-hmm. difference between the two?
Sure. Look, training is where you've got an agenda of skills or competencies that you're trying to get across to a person or a group of people. So there's generally goals, and we would test people. I think actually we should test them before and after so we can measure any improvements. And so training is often skill-based, and it's driven by a predetermined agenda. Coaching is very much driven by the learner. And so a good coach, first and foremost, finds out from the learner what's hot for you. What are your challenges? What are your aspirations? What do you want to achieve? And I think I mentioned this yesterday, Paul, that a good field consultant will always start at that point with the franchisees and say, look, what does success look like for you and how can I help you achieve this? So once the coach has determined what the let's talk about coaching in the franchising context, so say the franchisor being a coach to the franchisee. So they would ask the franchisee, they have a bit of a discussion about what does the franchisee want to do differently or better and why. And in the boot camp, Paul, we'll be teaching these coaching skills. There are some very powerful questions that you can ask people to determine what's hot for them. Once we've determined that, I would do a reality test around, is the person really committed to, are they willing to pay the price to achieve these things? And when you get that sense of passion or enthusiasm that the person really wants this, then the coach, through a process of questioning, draws out from the person what they are going to do to achieve that goal. And again, this is one of the key differences between coaching and training. Often in training, the trainer will impart their experience and their knowledge. But in coaching, you draw the actions out of the person by asking a series of carefully crafted questions. And what often happens is that the person, and we all often know what we need to do, we've got the resources inside us, no one has ever encouraged us or ever taken us on a process to identify what that might look like. And what the magic of coaching is because the person comes up with the solution themselves, they own it, as opposed to the coach owning the solution. And as we all know, when we own something, we have greater commitment to it. And this is the power of coaching and why
sure.
It works so well.
Absolutely. You know, yesterday and then today, you mentioned the word talk a lot. And you said when they talk to franchisees, and yes, they kept saying talk. And I bring this up because obviously that falls into the line of communications and one of the key words that we brought out of yesterday's session. But yet, I know there are a lot of franchise field consultants and franchise support personnel that communicate at times almost exclusively through email. And I think a lot of times try to hide behind an email because then they get a response, they can read it, they can gauge it, they can think about it. But certainly it's not as effective as actually discussing a situation. And I'm sure you'd agree with that, but would you care to elaborate on that?
Yeah, I agree totally with that. Email can be one of those evil things that can cause a lot of harm and a lot of lost opportunities. Look, email's good for imparting facts and, you know, some information, but it certainly should not be used if there's any emotion to be communicated. Like if you're upset about something, or, you know, I'm talking about from a franchisee's point of view or a franchisor's point of view, you should never put that in an email because inevitably it can be blown up even worse than, you know, you might want to make a sort of a slightly sarcastic comment back to someone. That can be interpreted as being extremely disrespectful and taken out of context. and it escalates, as I'm sure you've seen, Paul. You know, like you've seen these email wars where, as the emails are going backwards and forwards, the emotion starts to escalate even more. So I would definitely, use the telephone if there's any sort of feeling or emotion you're trying to communicate, or if the issue is very important. And of course, face to face is even better.
Yeah, absolutely.
One
thing too that people should remember too about email is that it does live forever. And sometimes, as we talked about yesterday, about attorneys being dragged in often too soon, but understanding that at some point they may. You know, a lot of the key players are, go by the wayside and move on, probably more so from the franchisor's perspective, where the same executives might be not be there 4 years from now when something actually goes to trial. And the only thing that's left is that email, and you have to look at an email and how is it interpreted standing alone.
Yeah. Exactly. Now, Paul, we had a little chat earlier today, and I said to you, what would happen if the computer, because I'm talking to you through Skype at the moment, and we're talking about communications, so this is a good example. I said, what would happen if we lost communication on Skype? And I said, I'd ring you back in. Remember that?
Right, absolutely.
Yeah, we were talking about that. And a little sign has just come up on my computer telling me that I've run out of Skype credit. So this is very embarrassing. So I'm going to need to ring you back straight away on the telephone, and we're going to have a seamless transition. How does that sound?
Absolutely, and I'll look for you there. And I will.
So, and while I'm just dialing in on the telephone, you might like to talk a little bit about what the next question is, and we'll do the transition straight across.
Right, okay? Absolutely. Go right ahead, and I look forward to seeing you up on the dashboard momentarily. Just as everybody knows, yesterday we talked about, great expectations and when perception meets reality. And a lot of that also can be related back to training. And as Greg pointed out, being able to understand ahead of time, what the learners are looking to understand, and being able to provide them with practical application, if you would, so that they can take it and run with it. And in Greg's book, Profitable Partnerships, which is now in its seventh edition, and the subtitle there is Improve Your Franchise Relationships and Change Your Life, and Franchising Magazine gave it a 10 out of 10. It really is a very remarkable book, and something I recommend highly, because it runs hand in hand with Greg's Franchise Relation Boot Camp. And I believe we have Greg back on the line. Greg, are you there?
So we've done this seamless transition. It's like refueling in space, and I've moved
Absolutely.
From my Skype to my telephone. How's that?
It's amazing. You're in Australia. I'm here. We're like a half a day apart time-wise, and that went off without a hitch. I'm glad you're back.
Yes. Yeah.
And I was just mentioning the Profitable Partnerships book.
I was listening as I was dialing in. And, look, we've sold, over 40,000 copies of that book. And just not to boast, but just to give an example of what I was talking about earlier about the power of advocacy, I've never run an ad for that particular book. We've never promoted it directly, through any traditional form of marketing, but all the sales have come through word of mouth. Like somebody will read it and recommend it to somebody else. And
sure.
So my marketing costs in distributing that book are zero, and it's only recently you've been able to get it on Amazon. All the sales have occurred through our website. So it's just a really good example of the power of advocacy in growing a business or growing product sales.
Sure, and just like we had a contingency plan before we started today's segment, It's something that franchisors and franchisees alike should have some contingency plans in place as the what if. And I think those type of plans in place eliminates the potential of dealing with it emotionally. We deal with things emotionally when they hit us by surprise. But if we have a plan in place, it's easy to say, okay, let me open up my drawer, let me get on my computer, let me find that contingency plan, let me look at it, and now I can deal with it rationally.
Yes. One of the I'll just share a little secret here about goal setting, Paul, that the research has shown us, that when people set goals, you know, we often think about, you know, we talk about, you know, have a SMART goal, you know, it's specific and measurable and achievable and realistic and time-bound, or we use the acronym BEST goals. A BEST goal is it's believable for you, it energizes you, it's specific and it's time-bound. Now, that's one step in the goal-setting process, and you need to sort of articulate this. But one of the most important differentiators of whether people achieve their goals or not is to think about what could go wrong. And in the coaching conversations that we teach at the boot camp, we say, okay, once the person has determined what they want to do, you then ask the question, what might come up that could get in the way, or what's a potential barrier to you achieving this? And, you know, some people might say, oh, that's negative talk. Not at all. What happens is then we start to identify, well, actually, you know, I could get distracted, or someone could criticize me and I could lose my confidence and so on and so forth. And then you ask the question, okay, look, if that did happen, how would you deal with it? They go, oh, well, you know, what stops me getting distracted is I make myself a list. Or if someone criticizes me, I can just say to myself, well, that's that person's opinion. That's not necessarily the truth. And having thought through the barriers, when they do hit a barrier, and inevitably we do, they don't get discouraged. They keep going because they've got the old plan B. So this is an important principle of coaching, goal setting, as well as project management.
Sure, absolutely. How often should training occur, franchisor to franchisee?
The franchisor to franchisee, as much as possible. I would suggest that at least every quarter, every 3 months, the franchisees should be undergoing some sort of professional development. Now, that may be through face-to-face meetings, like regional meetings. It may be through webinars. I know a lot of groups are using webinars extensively these days. And, of course, online learning is becoming, you know, more popular as well. It's not always that popular with franchisees because sometimes they can see it as an imposition, you know, I'm having to go onto the computer and complete this stuff. But I think at least every quarter people should be able to tick boxes and say, this quarter I have, you know, done a little bit of training on budgeting skills. I've done a little bit of, you know, refresh on basic supervisor or management skills. I've done a little bit of training or coaching on marketing skills. Now, some of this training could be done through the field consultant coming out and coaching with the franchisee. And some, if you like, would you like to talk about the methods?
Sure, absolutely.
That, you know, the training could be delivered as well. I might kind of weave that in. So it should be ongoing. It shouldn't just be like once a year, you know, I go to a conference and, you know, do a few workshops or something. And look, the number of ways that people can learn and grow are almost endless. You know, if we start with the conferences, if the conference is well run, it will have a significant component of professional development. It should not be just listening to speakers on a stage talk at you. And you know why? The research shows that when you sit passively listening to someone on a stage talk, usually for some reason you're in a darkened room, you probably remember about 10 to 15% of what that person said, talked about,
mm-hmm.
which is not really a very good return on investment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially if you're paying these people, you know, $10,000, $20,000. So if you're looking for a bit of entertainment, fine. But if you want people to grow and learn from their time at a conference, you've got to engage them in some sort of learning process and a good presenter. And again, I mentioned Katrina Mitchell yesterday. She runs Franchise Speak, and she understands this because I know she selects her speakers who have these skills. A good speaker at a conference really knows how to get the audience involved. And I was talking to someone on Sunday. I was at a conference, and a guy came up to me at lunchtime, and he said, "Oh, that was awesome. Your talk was fantastic." And I said to him, "The truth is, Mark, you will remember what you said much more than what I said." And he looked at me blankly for a minute, and he goes, "Ah, yes, you're absolutely right. Because during my talk, I got them also talking to each other about things." So he'll go home and he'll remember the conversation that he had with his buddy about his goals, and he'll vaguely remember what I spoke about. So, you know, the conferences are the opportunity for people to get engaged in conversations and workshops, and they're going to learn through that. You know, we talked about the action learning earlier, where they're thinking about real life situations that are relevant to them. So that's
back to the.
I'm not sure if you've got any thoughts on conferences, Paul, because I know you do a bit of speaking as well.
Yeah, I think conferences. I mean, there's a lot of different categories, and most people lump them all in together. I mean, there are conferences, there are workshops, and then of course, you know, training sessions, and I think they fall distinctly into three different categories. And
yes.
But in all of them. I agree with you as far as engagement is absolutely paramount in order for people to walk away believing that they can take something away with them and they could put it to good use back in the field. And, you know, one of the things that I often hear, especially as you know, I talk a lot about social technology and social media, and it's still kind of a gray area for a lot of people. But, you know, they want to walk away and be able to use something. They want to take away something that they could use the next day in their business. If it's entirely theory and there's no practical application the following day, they will look back and say, "I did not get anything out of that conference, training program, or workshop." So absolutely, they have to come to the table prepare to learn, and be able to take away something that they could utilize the following day. And I think that is a way to help them remember.
It is, and I think another thing that would help the franchisee learning pool is at conferences or meetings, the quality of the MC or the facilitator can make a huge difference. So at a conference, the MC, you know, like whoever, or the chairman of the conference, if they set it up well and get that expectation that people are expected to set learning goals for themselves over the next 2 or 3 days, that people are responsible for their own learning, if a session is not working for them, they can do something about it. They can ask a question of the speaker, and if it's really that boring and that bad, they can leave. And maybe they can go out and sit by the pool and talk to a fellow franchisee and get some real learning happening. So, you know, we're always, we have the power to turn situations into useful learning situations or not. So the MC, you know, creating processes after linking the speakers together, you know, summarising what a speaker just said, getting the audience to reflect on what it means to them. These are all things a really good MC would do to improve the effectiveness of learning at a conference or a meeting.
Sure.
Paul, sorry, go on.
You know, just to add a point to that, I mean, it does allow for the continuity of the conference from one section to the other, and it allows to build upon what was just said. And that's not a lot different than what we opened up with.
Yep.
Tell us what you're going to do. Do it and tell us what we've done. Build upon that. Move forward to the next step. So I agree with you there 1,000%.
Yep. Now, I'd just like to talk about IFA conferences for a moment, because I think, you know, often some of those sessions are brilliant and others really are lost opportunities. And I think what happens in the best IFA, this is for the training for the franchisors or professional development for the franchisors, the best sessions always have good question and answer sections in them. A lot of time for, you know, the audience to ask questions of what's relevant to them. And, of course, you want to make sure that the speakers have enough experience and confidence to be able to handle questions live. I think what often happens with speakers and trainers is they hide behind their PowerPoint slides, and you know, that's what where we started today. I said the difference between effective training and ineffective training. Ineffective training is often driven by the needs of the trainer, whereas effective training is driven by the needs of the learners. And question-answer sessions are a brilliant way of bringing a session to life and making it relevant to the learners. Now, one way we can also bring sessions to life is to have, you know, for franchisees, is to have franchisee panels. And the way we run a franchisee panel is we'll interview the franchisees prior to the conference and find out what they do well, and then we'll bring them out the front at the conference one at a time, and we'll really drill down and draw that person out through a process of questioning about what produces success for them. And I was at a conference last week. It was a pharmacy industry conference, and it was just amazing when the panel started and the first franchisee sat out the front and started to talk about how he has quadrupled the sales of his business in 1 year. So you heard that right. This guy has quadrupled his sales, and
wow.
He took the business over, and he explained in detail how he had done it. You could have heard a pin drop in the room, the intensity of listening, and all you could hear is the scratching of pens on paper as people were just vigorously writing down what he was saying. It was definitely, this panel session was definitely the highlight of the conference. And then we got another franchisee out, and she had doubled her sales in the last 2 years. And this is a person who's been running the business for 5 years, so she's still producing this growth in an economy that's really struggling. And she talked about, you know, the routines and the processes and the systems she uses in the way she trains her staff. And again, you know, the intensity in the room as people were writing stuff down. And then the franchisees started to ask each other questions. And so they started to draw each other out. And then we opened up the room to questions, and I just facilitated. So my role in that sort of learning environment is just to draw the knowledge out of the room and to encourage two-way communication. And I would probably say that would have been one of the most powerful learning experiences that I've been in for a long time. Now, that cost the franchisor nothing because they were drawing on resources internally, and the value was enormous. So that's an example, another process around good learning. And again, at the boot camps, we use a lot of this technique because I'm drawing the knowledge out of the room and creating opportunities for people to share their experience with each other. The magic of franchising is that despite us all working in different industries, we all share similar challenges, you know, in managing people and implementing change and so on. So that's another example of a very powerful learning process.
Greg, you had mentioned earlier when I asked you about how often training should occur, and you had mentioned four times
a year. Much as possible, but probably quarterly, yeah.
Right. So quarterly, and also earlier you had mentioned relevance and stuff that is of interest to the learner. How does a franchisor keep such frequent training relevant, fresh, compelling, and ultimately try to draw out the enthusiasm in the room?
Yes. Look, sometimes a franchisor will run a questionnaire or a survey prior to conferences or meetings. And look, they're okay, but I find talking to people the best. So I'd get on the phone to franchisees and I'd be asking them, what's your biggest challenge at the moment? What's keeping you awake at night? What would make our next meeting together really useful for you? Also ask them, what did you enjoy most about the session that we just had, or, you know, at the end of the conference? What aspects of the conference were most useful for you and why? So these, you know, evaluation sheets are extremely powerful as a method of research on developing up your learning curriculum for the next time you meet together. And I think franchises, we don't often study them enough. So I think listen to what the participants are telling you. And I think the value of talking, Paul, rather than a survey, is you can probe and dig a bit deeper. So if somebody says, oh, staff, and you'll say, okay, well, you know, when you say, what's your biggest challenge? Staff. Well, what does that mean? So you can say, well, tell me a little more. And it might mean I'm having trouble motivating my staff. They seem to be lethargic, or it might be, look, I have a lot of staff turnover in the business, and that's creating a problem. I can't seem to keep good people. They move on. Or it might be about staff honesty. They might say, look, I suspect staff are, you know, bending the rules or giving product away, and that's a concern. So we can drill down very specifically, and then you can create workshops around those specific topics. So, say for instance, the topic of fraud, it's relevant to all businesses. So you might even run a workshop on how to reduce the risk of fraud in your business, and you know, how to save money by, you know, you need to probably word it a little bit diplomatically. And, you know, I reckon you could run a 1 or 2 hour workshop, a very exciting and relevant workshop around tips and techniques to make sure staff aren't ripping you off, would be an example.
Right, and that would be interesting.
I reckon a franchisee who went to that session would go, that was awesome, rather than some boring session on human resource management strategies for small business owners and have some person talking about, you know, the 5, you know, R's of HR or whatever. People are asleep in the room. So you need to make the topic, you know, very specific. And, you know, I could rattle off 10 now, Paul, to you that I reckon would get the blood pumping of the franchisees. How to increase your average sale per customer. How to turn customers into advocates so they'll tell everybody how great you are. How to maintain your energy and motivation every day so you look forward to coming to work. How to get your family excited and supportive about your involvement in the business. So rather than resent the time you're putting into the business, that they encourage you to spend the time in the business. How to keep on top of your finances. How to get the best value out of your accountant and bookkeeper. How to get more productivity out of your staff. How to reduce your cost of goods. You know, I could go on. These are all daily challenges that franchisees are facing. If you just ask them, then you can cobble together or put together some workshops with a combination of franchisees themselves talking as practitioners, and you can get some expert input in there as well. So you might have 3 speakers talking on the topic.
Yeah, I love how you went right to the practical application with all of those titles. How to.
Yes.
As opposed to some others that might say why you should monitor your finances. Yours would be how to monitor your finances so that it's a practical application.
Yes, and in the session, yes, you'd give a rationale as to why it's important, but the most important thing is to tell them how to do it. You know?
Sure. And
how to squeeze more value out of your monthly P&L. You know, every franchisor wants their franchisees to do monthly P&Ls. But, you know, showing people how to get real value and analyze the metrics and the ratios within their P&L, now that would be a sexy session.
Sure.
You know,
well,
yeah, it's exciting stuff.
You know, we've talked about a lot of the how-tos. We talked about, you know, these titles. We talked about them having practical applications and basically coming down to takeaways. So now I'll ask you, with the upcoming franchise relation boot camps, what can franchisors expect to take away by attending the boot camps?
Okay, so we would apply the same principles of learning at the boot camp as I'm imploring franchisees to apply, sorry, that I want the franchisors to apply with their franchisees. So just experiencing the boot camp in itself, put aside the content, the fantastic content we're going to cover, but watching the way we run the sessions, people will come away with about 10 different techniques that they can apply with their franchisee learning. So, for instance, how to run a round table. Now, you know, you've been to round tables, I've been to round tables. Some of them are fantastic and some of them are woeful. There's reasons for that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a whole technology or a science around running a good round table. And I'll be, not only will we be teaching the science of a good round table by showing people how I want them to run their round tables, but they'll also, you know, get great content from the round tables as well. I'll be showing facilitation techniques, how to facilitate a room of 10 to 500 people where everybody can get involved, everyone can have a say, we get constructive communication happening within the room. I'll be demonstrating how to do that in the boot camp, and then people can take that technique away and use it in their own franchise meetings. So you understand what I'm saying about the process of learning is probably just as important as the content that's been
absolutely
covered. We'll do some simulations or I don't like to use the word role play, but there's a few simulations we'll do where we'll create a scenario and I'll get them to think of themselves as franchisees. And how would you feel in this situation? And I'll actually put them in the situation and then we'll workshop what were the emotions you felt in that situation if you were a franchisee? Why? Have you ever done that to your franchisees? How do you think they felt about it? And then we draw the learning back to, so what will you do going forward in the management and leadership of your franchisees to get buy-in to change, for instance. So we're going to do a case study or a simulation around a change where a franchisor is trying to drive through a rebranding exercise. And I'll be sharing quite a bit of research, Paul, about the studies we do. Last night, I was at the office till 9 o'clock with my research team. There were six of us sitting around the board table, and we spent 4 hours analysing some of the data that's been coming in from our franchisee success study, and I'll be reporting some of those findings at the boot camp. This is like world first, hot off the press research that no one else will have access to. And it's really unlocking the secrets of what drives franchisee success and satisfaction. So we'll be talking about that. For instance, one of the things that we've been researching is conflict and what creates conflict, what types of people are more prone to conflict. And I'll be sharing some of the research that's coming out on that. We've been also looking at brand passion and what drives someone to feel passionately about your brand and the enormous impact that that has on performance. I actually spoke on that, Paul, at the last IFA conference. Eric Stites organised a seminar on engagement of franchisees, and I shared some research we'd done showing that franchisees that are more passionate about their brand outperform the other franchisees in the group.
Sure.
We'll be covering off some pretty interesting stuff like that. We'll also talk a lot about field visits. And in this topic today where we've been talking about, you know, how to support franchisees, the field visit is probably one of the most powerful ways to drive performance. One of my colleagues, Leanne, she's just recently retired. She was just a fantastic field consultant. And whenever Leanne would go and look after a territory of franchisees, sales in that territory would go up by about 20% within 3 months. So it's pretty powerful stuff. And
absolutely.
Like, she's like a secret weapon. So what does what does someone like Leanne do that can drive performance of a franchise territory so profoundly? So we'll talk at the boot camp about the strategies and the techniques to drive the performance of your franchisees using your operations or your field team. Oh, I'm getting excited, Paul, just talking about what we're going to do, because to me, this is one of the things I probably enjoy the most in the work we do, imparting and sharing. And it's not just me talking, it's creating an environment where people can learn from each other. There's often so much good experience in the room. At the last boot camp, one of the franchise systems, I think he brought 20 of his team, and he also brought the chairman of his franchise advisory council. And this guy, Brian, was just a fantastic contributor to the boot camp, you know, sharing the franchisees' perspectives on a lot of the topics that we'd been covering. And it kind of kept us all honest as well. Like, so, you know, when we were discussing about dealing with franchisees, you know, sometimes we can become a little bit guilty of becoming victims and saying, oh, the franchisee, you know. And Brian would say, hang on a minute, guys. Like, you've got to understand why a franchisee would get upset if, you know, you rolled out a change program. And he would put that point of view. It was a good reality kind of test for us.
Right. Well, Greg, we're getting
some
close to the top of the hour.
Yeah.
Boot camp dates are September 23rd and 24th in Dallas and October 4th and 5th in Denver. It's on the franchisespeakers.com site on the right-hand side. You can link in there and be able to get more information about the boot camps. And, Greg, of course, thanks again for being my guest today and for sharing some great information about the franchise relationships and, of course, about the upcoming events. And, of course, I definitely look forward to seeing you at the events. I will be there. And remember, listeners, say that again.
I forgot you were going to be there, and I haven't told you this, but we're going to suck your brains about how to use social media to drive profitable partnerships as well.
Absolutely, I'd love to. Now, remember, listeners, the events are in Dallas, Texas, September 23rd and 24th, Denver, Colorado, October 4th and 5th. More information and to reserve your seat, check the Franchise Speakers website at franchisespeakers.com, or better yet, as Greg was elaborating before, just pick up the phone and call Katrina Mitchell, speak at 720-304-3710. Nothing like talking about it. Don't go ahead and relegate yourself to email. Hey, Greg, I really appreciate it. Have a great day down under, and I'll be seeing you in I guess about a month, right?
Sure, Paul. That's going to be fantastic. Thank you.
All right. My name is Paul Segreto, wishing you the best, the very best, in this very great thing we call franchising. Franchise Today Special Edition is out.